Welcome to Conversation Changers, the podcast. My name is Adele and I am backfilling for LA. I am a Fleming placement student completing my social service worker and mental health and addiction worker program and have been working closely with Bridges Peterborough. I am excited to be here with the Conversation Changers podcast today. We are a group of people aiming to change the conversations people are having surrounding poverty. The Conversation Changers bring people together from all walks of life to learn about bridging the gap between poverty and privilege. This week, Todd and Laura interview Mary Gordon. Like our previous interview subject, David, Mary has experience participating as a mentor in a bridging team. We mentioned in our last episode that Laura is currently co-facilitating one of these bridging teams, which aims to bring people together across class lines. This interview was conducted via Zoom, so there is some minor background noise. Save some more of Mary's good stuff for later. Mary is an enthusiastic and extremely capable communicator, so we'll let her speak for herself.
It's smoother. Practice.
I have a very dry mouth.
Are you happy with that one?
There was a few hiccups, but you know. It, like I said last time, it makes it a little more real,
yeah,
I guess.
We're real people, right? So we're allowed to, you know, make real people things happen.
It is funny, though, that as soon as it's like go time, my mouth just like...
Yeah,
that's good. Oh, sorry, Laura.
Wait, now...
Now. Hi, I'm Laura.
Hi, I'm Todd. Today, we are speaking with Mary Gordon, who is a mentor in the first bridging team. We have talked about bridging teams on the podcast before. These are small groups of people who meet together from different social and economic classes. Members meet weekly, discuss thoughts, share stories, and support each other in various aspects. I was involved in the first bridging team with Mary, which is where we met for the first time. Thank you for joining us, Mary.
Pleasure to be here, Todd.
Okay, my first question for you is, what motivated you to get involved with the bridging team?
Well, that's such an interesting question. I don't think it was out of the goodness of my heart. You know how there's sort of a cult of personality in the world? Well, I met Alan and Lynn years before the first bridging team. He was the minister at the church I was going to, and I've had a lifelong fight with the church. I find churches to be very clubby, and they spend their money on themselves, and they care more about their property than they do about the world around them. Whereas I was a believer in the social gospel, which said you got to be out there working, doing God's will in the community, right? So having met Alan and Lynn and having accompanied Lynn on her journey into ministry and followed Alan's brilliant, creative social gospel sermons, I decided to get involved with their community ministry called Bedford House. And we spent a couple of years experimenting with different ways of being church out in the community. A way that is not religious, but more spiritual. So I was deeply invested in this experiment to find out what the community needed and how we doers of good could contribute to what was happening, you know, to sort of jump into the flow of social justice in the community and see where we can be the best help. So we had about a dozen different experiments, a lot of them on the spiritual side. But throughout this, Lynn had discovered this movement called Bridges Out of Poverty from the States. And she and Alan and others talked about it, and it was so similar to the process that Lynn had gone through. We thought it might work in the community. Of course, we had to do a pilot test. And Todd, as you will recall, you and I were on the pilot test.
Yes, we were.
You were. And I I thought it would be good for me to be part of the pilot, even though I was a backroom kind of planner. Not because I needed to learn anything, but because I already knew everything that I needed to know. I was steeped in social justice, and I have lived experience of poverty. So, I mean, what could I possibly learn? I just thought I should be part of it so I could document it to see if it was going to work for Bedford House as a ministry. So it was somewhat of a shock and surprise to be part of a group that actually had moments of breakthrough clarity about not just about poverty, but about how to do well in the world, how to live a good life. It was a huge shock to me. So that combination of wanting to make a community ministry work and the curiosity about the process. I was very skeptical about this process. Those two things are what motivated me to be in the pilot.
Thank you, Mary. I would like
welcome,
to ask,
Laura.
I would like to ask if there are any regular self-care or spiritual practices in your life that you'd like to share with us.
Oh, heavens. I have so many. The older you get, the more you practice, right? So part of the work I did with Bedford House before Bridging Teams was something called Soul Quest, where we spent 9 months. Jeez, 9 months. I think of it now, 9 months seems to recur within the Bedford House project. Our first Bridging Team was 9 months. Well, the Soul Quest was also 9 months, and it was a group of people on a study period with three different retreats built in. And the final one was a 4-day vision fast out in the woods with a lot of black flies and no fly repellent and no glasses, no books, no pen or pencil, no nothing, just water and one lemon for 4 days. And that really kicked me off on a set of spiritual practices, the 9-month experience as well as the spiritual quest. So there was a practice of fasting and meditating. There's a practice of deliberate noticing. So when you go for a walk or you sit in your backyard or you even sit and think, it's a type of meditative practice, which I now do a lot of. And because I have a fairly mercurial personality and I tend to react rather than think first, I've learned to practice mindfulness meditation for self-care. And that involves, it's very physical to me, the mindfulness exercise where the mind and the body join. So just as I learned how to give birth without anesthetic, I learn now how to isolate the pain, whether it's mental or physical, and relax the rest of my being. And it works just as much spiritually as it does physically. The other thing I do a lot of is reading. Is when I read, I can leave my life on hold and live another life. Like I'm just about to turn 75 and I swear I've had 10,000 lives just from reading. So does that kind of answer the self-care thing?
Absolutely.
Good.
Oh, thanks, Mary. That's awesome. Good. Nice to know that you're looking after yourself. So that's good.
Well, I'm also married, so my wife looks after me too.
Right. Okay. My next question for you would be, what are some of the highlights from your mentoring experience? And if you have any specific moments, you can share those with us too.
There's just so many. My experience was a wonderful combination of both hands-on and backroom strategizing. So one of the things I remember really fondly about the experience was sitting around the table at Bedford House once a month with usually 4 or 5 or 6 people, either staff, people from the group, awesome people. When we asked the people who joined our group who had come from experiences living in poverty, when we asked them what they wanted to be called, they said, we got it. We're the awesome people. And so it stuck, you know. So a couple of those folks would join us for an evaluation. And what we would do, of course, we would talk about what happened at the last session and how to plan for the next month. But we would go through all of the one-page evaluation forms. What worked, what didn't, what could use improvement, what would you like to see more of? And we would take turns reading them out loud to each other. So it had the effect, as we went around the table, absolutely reinforcing everything that happened during the month previous. So it was like a double whammy. You know, when you watch a video of your birthday party and you sort of relive it, it was like that. And it was even more so because people were saying, it was so constructive. People were over the moon about telling each other stories, about the quality of the food that we ate, over the moon, and the laughter. So at the end of that 9-month period, when we consolidated all of those evaluations and did a word cloud, it was a mishmash of words with this enormous stories across the front, because it was far and away the most common number one facet of our bridging teams. So the telling of stories meant, it was such a highlight for me. It meant we had to shut up and listen, and we had to listen in a way that didn't rush us to judgment. We had to just listen and let that person's experience flow into us. And we were allowed to comment after, but only in turns and only briefly and without advice or relatability. In other words, you couldn't say, oh yeah, I remember when that happened to me. No, this is this person's moment. And if I want it for myself, then I've got to have it for other people. So that was the storytelling, the reflective listening, people allowing each other into our intimate lives, gave us a sense of trust that you can't get otherwise. It's not cocktail party chat. And it's not talk in a bar, and it's not talk during sports. It's something very deliberate. And it became the means by which I lost my certainty that I knew what I was doing. You know, it gave me a sense of humility that we were all completely equal on this front. And I think another real highlight for me, the first 3 months of our pilot, we had engaged an Indigenous facilitator to help with our weekly sessions and to bring a different lens. We had already studied the lenses through Bridges of Poverty, the economic class lenses. But here in Nogojiwanang, it's really critical that we see our community and our people through an Indigenous lens as well as our own, because they were here first and because they're a powerful movement within the community. I don't know if you guys watched the inauguration the other day in the United States. I watched every second because I'm a political junkie. But Jennifer Lopez, looking absolutely brilliantly smashing, stood up and sang a cappella, "This land is your land," which to Indigenous people is an absolute slap in the face. And she's Latina. You know, she's a Latina Indigenous person. So it just did not make sense to me. And it did bring me back to our work with Charlene. She's not only bringing an Indigenous lens to our pilot, she brought a facilitator's lens and came up with some of the best icebreakers we ever had. The first 3 months were, what would you call it, Todd? We had to learn about each other. Mm-hmm. I mean, you guys came in with what set of expectations?
Yeah.
we all came in with a different set, and you know what mine was. I'm going to, you know, show my expertise here and help fix everybody.
Yeah.
Using these exercises that Charlene brought to us and the ever-present gentle reminder that our view is not always the only view, we spent 3 months developing trust. You know, you walk into a room, and I can just imagine everybody thinking, okay, what are these do-gooders going to make us do now? Or, you know, like play into each other's expectations. And all of that disappeared within 3 months. So very much a highlight for me. And the final thing, you know, other than the food, which is my second favorite thing to do on earth, is eat, it was the laughter. Holy Tipa. I don't think, you know, other than a few drunken moments in my 30s, I don't think I've ever laughed that hard in my life. It was, and it was accidental humor, wasn't it, Todd? It
mostly, yeah.
We didn't bring in a comedian or stage jokes. It was moments of just breath, take your breath away, laughter. Fun.
Wow, yeah. That was a while ago, and that's amazing that you're making me remember all that stuff. So thanks. That's a bonus for me too. So
you want to know another memorable moment?
What's that?
It was you, Todd.
Uh-oh.
Well, a couple with you in it, but one of them was, remember that graphic exercise we did with the huge sheets of flip chart paper?
Yes.
And we just, you know, a group of us would gather around each one of the awesome people and just kind of do this sort of green light brainstorming exercise of all the things you wanted to do. And we ended up with a flip chart sheet for you that you said showed you clearly where you want to be, what you want to be doing.
Yes.
And here you are doing it.
Yeah.
Mine was flying. I'm on a different path than you are, but mine was definitely flying. I'm going to fly.
Yeah. You'll fly one day, probably.
That's my plan. Fly away. Oh, look at the cat.
Myra has joined us.
At that point in the interview, my cat Myra joined us.
Okay, Laura. So that means you are up. What might your quote be for today?
Today's quote is from Amelia Earhart, who said that courage is the price that life exacts for granting peace.
Thank you, Laura, and thanks to our guest, Mary Gordon, and thank you for listening.
This podcast was brought to you by the generous support of the Ontario Trillium Foundation, the people of Greenwood and the United Church of Canada, the City of Peterborough, the Mount Community Center, and many individual sponsors, people like you who want to change the conversation. Our team for this podcast was Laura, Greg, Todd, LA, and Adele. Thank you for listening. We can be found at bridgespeterborough.ca. So I stumbled a lot in that first part. Do you mind if I redo just the intro?
I'm good.
Sure.
Okay, sorry.
No worries. Really, it's, you know, it's not the easiest thing to do when you think that people are listening. Suddenly your throat closes up and your mouth forgets how to work.
We'll let you off with it this time, but
I appreciate it.
Just picture them all naked if that's not too horrifying.
Naked words. Okay. So I will take two.
And Adele, at the front of when you say welcome to It's Only Conversation Changers, there's only one the.
Oh, yeah. See, I add words sometimes. Thank you. Okay. Take two.